are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It's Monday, June 5th, 2017. My name is Michael Brooks, and I'm Michael Monday, and this is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We're broadcasting live steps from the industry-ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America. Downtown Brooklyn, USA, on today's program, Ben Mankiewicz, Turner Classic Movies, The Young Turks, Man About Town. We're talking about the 2018 Republican strategy. Well, it takes a leaf from the Gianforte playbook. Attack the media. Apparently, the 2018 referendum is not going to be on a mentally unstable president, a spiraling out of control world, attempting to take away your health care. No, it's going to be about the press, which has hurt their fifis. That and Donald Trump's very, very classy and very strategic response to the terrorist attacks in London. All that and more of Ben Mankiewicz. Jeremy Corbyn making the link between austerity and the undermining of the UK's national security. It's a brilliant move as he continues to close in on the zombie Tory party. Can he pull off a upset? Certainly be hoping so. Saudis and Gulf states cut off relations with Qatar, charging that despite the fact that Qatar is actually involved in proxy wars against Iran, they're actually secretly plotting with Iran. But there's other reasons as well. Conflicts over Hamas, the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. We'll get to that. Iraqi civilians, dozens, perhaps hundreds of civilians dead in Mosul and fighting in that city to take back control of that area from IS. Also reports of use of white phosphorus in that conflict. A prominent African-American political scientist and writer has had to cancel a tour because of threats on her life. Where are the free speech and open idea brigade people? Oh, I guess they're only interested when it's
fascism.
Fascism, neo-eugenics, boring pedestrian pseudo-intellectualism on Islam. Bill Maher, yeah. As the Turk said to Tom Hagen in The Godfather, the Don is slipping. Not only stepping in it with a really stupid racial joke, just dude is not really funny anymore. If he ever really was. And a Flint official has to resign after blaming the contamination of that city's water supply on its black residents. And of course, he didn't use the phrase black residents. All that and more on today's Majority Report. Actually, I want to do something shorter than the Sinclair Broadcasting clip, because that's a bit long. Sorry? Oh, that's for Mankiewicz? Okay, great. Let's actually do this. This is a really disgusting piece of sound. This is a guy, Phil Stair, who is the sales manager of the Genesee County Land Bank in Flint, Michigan, has had to resign after water activists took a recording of him saying this, warning if children are around, they're about to hear a disgusting word from a massively disgusting human being. Here it is.
Well, Flint has the same problems as Detroit. Fucking niggers don't pay their bills. Believe me, I deal with them.
There you go. There is a water crisis that was engineered by the state government that has poisoned Flint's water, that has caused a ongoing public health catastrophe in an already economically ravaged and terrorized city. And this local bank manager, well, he knows why, what the problem in Detroit is. It's that effing N-words don't pay their bills. Believe me, I have to deal with them. So, it's disgusting. He resigned, but another window into the heart of the modern Republican soul.
Record a racist is a good policy. Anytime you hear somebody like talking like that, turn that phone on. Get good at maybe surreptitiously turning on the recorder.
Yeah, sit back and let them talk. See what's on their minds. It's going to be something like that. On the complete opposite. Matt, I'm sorry. We always ask you this, but how long have you been on the MeUndies train?
Since 2011.
Jesus.
The summer.
Each time you say it, you get cockier.
Well, because everyone always thinks, everyone says he's been on it for 3 years. No, it's been since 2011.
2011 isn't 3 years. I'm bad at math. I'm just kidding. Pride starts on the inside. So celebrate yourself like super producer Matt does. And I will say myself, although I am much later to the game than him. So celebrate yourself with MeUndies. MeUndies makes the ultimate feel-good undies with free shipping right to your door. Satisfaction guaranteed. Designed in L.A., every pair of MeUndies is made with micro... What's that, Matt? Micro...
Modal.
Modal. A fabric 3 times softer than cotton. Their soft, stretchy undies come in ever-changing array of colors and patterns. No matter what your style, they've got something for you. That's because MeUndies believes in people feeling good and being themselves, which is why MeUndies is putting their money where their underwear is during Pride Month. For every pair of special edition Celebrate undies you buy during Pride, MeUndies will donate $1 to the Los Angeles LGBT Center. That's great. And as if you need another reason to try MeUndies, they're offering 20% off of your first pair and a satisfaction guarantee that you'll love them or your money back. Just visit MeUndies.com/majority. Head to MeUndies today and pick up a pair of special edition Celebrate undies. You not only get a discount on also undies, on awesome undies, you'll be donating to an amazing cause. Check out MeUndies.com/majority today. That's MeUndies.com/majority today. And are you hiring? Maybe you're a bank in Flint that needed to get rid of a racist. Or maybe you run any number of great businesses that listen to this show. There's actually a lot of small business people in our audience, as well as people who do recruiting for all sorts of outfits. So are you hiring and know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Finding great talent can be tough. Thankfully, with ZipRecruiter, you can post your job up to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently manages the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates for immediate results. And right now, my listeners can post on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. And one more time, try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. And I have one other great place to tell you about. That's Texture. With everything going on in the world, it can be hard to keep up with all the latest political moves and perspectives. To say the least, moves and perspectives. Yes, that's why I love the Texture app. It's an app that lets me read trusted sources. You know, I always mention them, whether it's a person like Matt Taibbi following their work across all threads or Fast Company. Sometimes there's a great report in Newsweek, all in the convenience of my own phone. With over 200-plus magazines available, Texture puts an endless supply of in-depth interviews and articles into the palm of your hand. And, I mean, Texture really is great for managing the information flow and certainly helping me, you know, do this job, obviously, the range. And also get me out of this job. As I mentioned, you know, I do look at, you know, Fast Company, Wired. Sometimes I do look at Yoga Journal. It's great. It's everything you need. And thanks to Texture's daily recommendations and inclusive interactive features, you can easily pinpoint the articles that you want to read. Plus, Texture is searchable, so you can mark what you like. Check out old issues or view bonus video content seamlessly. Everything from National Geographic to Fast Company to Rolling Stone is available for way less than the Texture app, which is selected as one of Apple's top 2016 iPad apps. Texture is normally $9.99 a month, but you can sign up right now at texture.com/majority. Get a 14-day free trial. That's 14 days to try Texture for free when you go to texture.com/majority. That's texture.com/majority. We will be right back with Ben Mankiewicz on the Majority Report.
Can't kill me again if you never kill me a break. Yes, I. And we say, Jah over evil, life over death. Demon can't kill me again. Good over evil, life over death. Satan can't kill me. Here comes the hot stepper. Fire burning hotter than paper. That song you written proper than later. Protected from the crown of my head, straight down to the very soul of the crepe, yeah. Me have a chat for them, them send gunshot poison to your accident. Long time them a try like half my oxygen, but you're in control, can't take me soul. Jah over evil, life over death, demon can't kill me.
Welcome back to the Majority Report. I'm Michael Brooks. Joining us now is my pal Ben Mankiewicz from Turner Classic Movies and the Young Turks. Ben, how you doing, man?
I'm well. Pal seems a little too friendly, but okay. We know each other.
Oh, all right. A very distant acquaintance who I was trying to make feel comfortable in this format, but fine, Benjamin.
No, we're pals. It's good to talk to you again. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while, man. It's good to talk to you. So I want to start, we'll get to the press stuff in a minute, but I just want to, and is there a way you can move away from, is there some type of dish situation going on?
Yeah, there's a dish situation going on, yeah. Which I am.
Is there a way to extricate yourself from that, pal?
Yeah, there's a way to extricate myself from that.
Thank you.
Hang on.
Like, a guy comes out and he says, we're not pals, but then he's like on the phone with me, like we're like
yeah,
making plans
cool
for
I,
dinner.
Is it cool if I do the dishes during this interview? Is that the problem? Yeah.
I think that there's mixed reactions to that in the studio. Yeah, sure, whatever. You're assaulting my eardrums. Ben, before we get to this wider press story with Trump, we just have to touch on, I mean, I'm going to get into the actual attacks in London in the second half of the show and really actually the brilliant and opportunistic way that Jeremy Corbyn is exploiting them, which I'm very excited about and approve of thoroughly. But can we just reflect on the second that, you know, and we'll get it up in a second, Trump's first tweet to Sadiq Khan, we have that right, Matt, where basically what Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, said was, there's no need to be alarmed. And he meant this in the context of there's heightened police presence on the street, but everybody stay calm. And Donald Trump tweeted, pathetic excuse by London Mayor Sadiq Khan, who had to think fast on his no reason to be alarmed statement. MSM is working hard to sell it. Now, Ben, I don't know that we're the MSM, but can we work hard to sell it together, please?
Yeah, let's work hard.
Yes.
Let's work hard to sell it. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I've reached a point. I first of all, I am at the risk of, it's not a risk, it would be oversharing, but I've started taking anxiety medicine most nights to sleep.
Wow.
And I'm trying to figure out, like, there's nothing going on in my personal life that needs dramatic attention, no more than usual.
Yeah, I was going to say, Ben, I don't want to be palling with you here, but I mean, really?
I just want to be held, Michael, and I don't understand. We've been married for 5 years. It doesn't seem... No, I think it's world anxiety. And
yeah.
And I get, you know, and I was watching a bunch of interviews of people on the left interviewing people this week, and I just, the whole thing made me tremendously anxious. And this fits into that. I mean, this is a, and it's hard to know where to put this. You know, here you are on a Monday and you're hosting the show, and this, see, and I'm not entirely sure why this is any bigger news than 137 other things before it. But it is. I mean, it certainly as big. He continues to prove himself unstable, mendacious, and disinterested in the world and how things work. You know, the other story out today, just that, that, you know, what McMaster and Tillerson and Mattis, the men on whom we're relying for our safety, all were assured that he was going to mention Article 5 when he spoke to NATO.
Right.
And they learned as he made the speech that he himself had removed it.
Right.
Like, he's a guy who doesn't get how the world works. And so, yeah, here's an opportunity as an attack in our closest ally. And, you know, he gets the, he sees the value in essentially inserting himself in it as if it's an attack here and scaring people here. And as a bonus at the same time, ridiculing a Muslim.
You know, right.
It works on a lot of levels for Donald Trump.
It works on a lot of levels. I mean, look, I guess the there's sort of three lanes to take with this. I used to say tracks. Now I say lanes. But I think that, you know, and I don't think that there's always value in still reiterating the fact and acknowledging the fact that, yes, this guy is a personality, is obviously uniquely mentally and emotionally and psychographically unsuited to be where he is. I mean, he's unsuited to be in any position of authority. I wouldn't want him, like, you know, managing a regional fast food chain. So there is that. And I think that a lot of this stuff does come down to just, you know, rage, resentment, aggression, and sense of incredibly short-term plays. Like, as I think even stepping out of the Paris Accords, you know, he campaigned on it. He said, I'm definitely going to do it. And then there was a several-month-long lag, clearly because, you know, he was sort of mixed minds about it. And then what happened was he went to Europe, and Macron beat him in a handshake contest, and Angela Merkel said he was a punk, and he was livid. So there you go. Steve Bannon's wing gets the win. But I think the bigger points that I want to sort of address, you know, is that, we'll get to the Republicans in a second, but there is still been this desire, and we hit this note a lot, but I think it's important to keep hitting it, that people from, you know, Fareed Zakaria to Bob Schieffer, to many other people who supposedly are sophisticated, would search for moments, whether it was a speech where he just read the teleprompter and seemed, you know, I mean, actually, by my standards, still totally not coherent, just, you know, right-wing claptrap, or even going and doing a sort of, you know, errant and non-strategic bombing of Syria. They were looking for these moments of, like, you know, and this happened throughout the whole campaign. Now he's the nominee. Maybe he'll stop being racist. Now he's the president. He'll grow into this job. And it was this incredible delusional wish against reality, which is really dangerous because this is who we're dealing with. And it's kind of like the press first was not able to make a distinction between, you know, when the Republicans lie about their numbers, it's, you know, 2 + 2 = 500 million. And then when Democrats lie about their numbers, it's 2 + 2 = 6.5, right? And those are the same thing. And now it's gotten down to, you know, this search for anything to make this normal. And I'm just wondering, like, are they ever going to accept that it's not?
I don't know. I think, the number, you know, with a Gallup poll at 36, I think there starts to be consistent polling under 35. You start seeing 33s, 32s, the 30, you know, George Bush at the 20. You know, each point drop when we get to 35, if it's consistent, because there's still some polls that'll have him at the low 40s. So we're averaging, you know, around 38 or 39 now. But that average starts hitting 35 and below. With each point, that'll represent some 6.3 congressional or state house Republicans, right? Who will think, okay, it is to my political advantage to say what I've probably already been thinking, if we're talking about if we assume there's some sanity in something.
Nah, that might be too generous.
Right, I got it. But yeah. but for some who just think, okay, they're now it becomes advantageous to me to step away from him and criticize him. Everything is politics, and if he continues to lose support and political power with it, I suspect that's the only way that will happen. My crystal ball is shattered and in pieces on the floor, and my kid is cutting her feet on it.
Have you talked to your therapist about that?
You probably sweep your floor. You've got a small child. I don't know what's going to happen. I've given up trying, but the numbers are moving down, and he acts like a lunatic, and legitimately a guy who needs to be calmed down, a guy who needs to needs to be drugged and sedated at least at times. And so that's when Republicans will start to peel away, if they're ever going to. My fear is
I don't think so.
Is a bigger picture fear. I think that'll happen a little. My fear is what happens when they do start to pull away, and that same instinct that has Zakaria and Schieffer and those people who and who have had moments where they've uttered those foolish words, Van Jones too, right?
Yep.
This is when he becomes president.
Oh God.
We are so desperate. It's true among my friends who don't follow politics, who are alarmed but say, "Oh, John McCain, Susan Collins, and Ben Sasse, Jeff Flake. These guys they're going to keep crazy things from happening." Right, and I think, I don't know where you're from or what you've been doing the last 20 years, but okay. But we'll settle for anything that isn't Trump afterwards, and in our desire for normalcy, and that the revolution, the revolution ends I think I've said this before to you, but the revolution ends with Mike Pence running against Evan Bayh in 2020.
That is a truly stomach churning and disgusting thought. But I think you're right. Although here are some of the complications in that, and we'll get to the Republican press strategy. I think that, overall Trump is still enormously popular with Republicans, because let's really, and if you look at focus groups with supporters of his, they'll randomly say things that don't make it, they're like, "Well, I like what he's doing, but I don't like him on Twitter," which, sounds nonsensical, right? I think what we have to deal with is that, of course, and there are the unique things to Trump as just an unstable and unhealthy personality, of course. On the other hand, it's benefited us in some ways, because if they were more disciplined and together, they would have already, the make America poorer, sicker, dumber agenda would be moving much faster, right? Like, the day they're going into healthcare markup in the Senate is the day he fires Comey, and then we're all of a sudden back into this melodrama. So in some ways, he's actually kind of halted some of the damage, although, they're moving forward quite nicely on a lot of, social, environmental damage and everything else. But I think we have to deal with the fact that this is what the Republican base wants. I think that it's not even just the policy set. They do want some version of a guy who, quote unquote, speaks his mind. We saw, Greg Gianforte assaulted a reporter. And I remember, and I don't know, I don't know the way the numbers worked out, but when I first saw that, I said, I wonder if this helps solidify his turnout. That was my first thought, right?
Sure.
And now, you look at this report that the GOP's 2018 election strategy, which is reported in McClatchy, is going to be built around attacking the media. It's going to be a referendum on essentially the press being unfair to Republicans. And I just want to quote, because this is a kind of darkly hilarious line. The strategy doesn't mean literally fighting the media, the strategist interview. The strategist interviews say they don't want their candidates imitating Republican candidate Greg Gianforte, who last month was charged with assaulting a reporter in Montana. But the aftermath of that incident was instructive for party strategists. Conservative media figures such as Laura Ingraham and Brent Brozell didn't rush to condemn Gianforte, and they criticized the reporter. The ensuing coverage, according to one Republican watching the race, energized GOP voters. So at the same time that we might think, you know, and again, stopping crazy things from happening, I don't think any Republican, maybe Susan Collins, just because of what she, the state she represents, but, you know, they're all committed to doing plenty of destructive and crazy things, like kicking millions of people off of Medicaid. I mean, that's a horrific, crazy thing to do. But it seems like the party is doubling down. If they double down on that media strategy, a lot of that is still going to be built around protecting Trump, saying the media is being unfair to him. You see Lindsey Graham and other supposedly quote-unquote sane people using Russia hearings to just run interference for him. So, you know, how does that strategy match with we can start to consciously decouple from this crazy guy?
It may make it impossible, and it may make it harder. That may be a subtle attempt to make it harder for the Republicans that I was talking about if that number dips to 35, which I've randomly picked. But probably not a bad number to pick of when Republicans start to legitimately panic. That may be a way to guard against them abandoning the party. Mm-hmm. That hey, look, the way we support you in your re-election bid is by doing the exact same things that energized our party in 2016. But as you know, like, they've now put it into, okay, they've now had a meeting at the RNC and turned it into a strategy. But it's been a strategy since Rush Limbaugh got on the air,
right,
to say that the press is a bunch of leftists and they can't be trusted. And Fox has been saying it. The New York Times, the Washington Post, they're leftists. They can't be trusted. That professor teaching your kid at Indiana State University, he's a leftist and he can't be trusted. And the scientists, those people, they're leftists and they can't be trusted.
Right.
You take the sort of the people who know the most about the given issue that we're talking about and tell them that they can't be trusted. And then we really shouldn't have to take long to figure out what is A, if not the only, but it's not the only, but what is certainly a significant reason in why we're so uninformed in this country and why crazy stories land. The right has successfully, with some media complicity, definitely, certainly television media complicity, has successfully turned us into a country where we don't believe what the press says. So it's pretty easy. I only wonder whether they're tapped out on it. You know, whether now that idea is just, you know, baked in among Republican voters, and that the whole strategy of running against it, you know, I don't know that you're gonna win anybody else, but I don't know. You don't need to win that many anybody else. They own Congress. They own the Senate. The Senate landscape is tough for Democrats, and they own, what, 33 state houses, you know?
And they also have, you know, very robust and aggressive forms of voter suppression, which you always need to talk about, I think, when we talk about this. But my question for you, Ben, and you might know this better than me, is, I'm assuming you do, do you think, though, that the difference is that when this stuff, and I guess arguably too, in some ways it goes even back to, you know, to Nixon, and there was always this kind of like right wing demonizing of the press. But even when this stuff started to bubble up in the 90s, and there was this whole architecture of direct mail and talk radio, and it was its own ecosystem and its own business and its own world, but it still seemed like, and then it culminated in Fox, but it seemed like what was happening then was like, we're going to get so aggressive and so robust that we will bully the, you know, the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, whatever, all the, you know, mainstream outlets. We're going to bully them into, you know, covering a baseless Clinton scandal. We're going to bully them into, you know, giving equal weight to climate change denial, or, you know, covering someone like Newt Gingrich as a, you know, as a visionary versus a, you know, the just sort of like pseudo-intellectual predator that he is. Now it seems like, because of the way media is so bifurcated, like there's very few outlets left that are really like the national source. You know, I mean, obviously there's different, of course, ABC, New York Times. I mean, there's legacy establishment media that has a big, very big reach. But, you know, even we are, and in some ways this has been a great, you know, progress in terms of proliferation of voices. But like a guy like Alex Jones, to me, it doesn't seem like they're not trying to make the quote-unquote mainstream press reflect their perspective. They're trying to cannibalize it for their own self-sustaining business venture. And that seems like a little bit of a different thing. Because it's one thing to say, you know, like the Bush and Cheney's were lying to and working with complicit reporters to manipulate a very compliant and failed mainstream media, if we're being honest about things like invading Iraq. But with Trump, it's like, well, that's fake news. Let's go talk to some, you know, Twitter troll who will spread a rumor for us. And that's right. A different incentive structure.
It's changed so dramatically. I'm not sure there's a solution for it. I'm not sure this is just what we're going to live with, and this is going to be the situation when you and I die, right? Do we somehow think that the New York Times, the Washington Post, the LA Times are going to, Dallas Morning News are going to reassert their dominance? No. And I don't see it happening, and it's all going to be video, you know, whether it's television or on the internet, of the people delivering this news, delivering information. And, you know, by and large, the television media since Cronkite has largely failed. You know, there have been glimmers of success, but I don't know what happens. I mean, smart media manipulators are having a much easier time than they did 10 years ago, and certainly 20 and 30 years ago. And I don't know what the solution is. I guess, you know, you think teaching, you know, I mean, obviously now I can't think of anything more important than teaching kids how to use the internet effectively, how to distinguish information on the web. But I don't think schools are doing that. I'm about to start my daughter in school. I mean, she's in preschool, but, you know, that's not a thing that comes up. I imagine that, you know, the legislature in Kansas is not going to fund it.
Probably not.
Yeah. So I don't know. And again, goes back to my having trouble sleeping. Like, I don't know what the way out here is. We'll win some elections. But, you know, you see a left that is squabbling significantly, as always, what it does. Unable, certainly at this point, to come up with a sort of coherent anti-Trump strategy other than an anti-Trump strategy, which is a good one. Right. You know, I'm glad that there's some unity there. But, of course, we can't even get the full breadth of the left to embrace that story is legitimate.
Well, I'm never going to support another war with Russia. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, you
liberals just, like you who want another world war just to cover for my wife's crimes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you and Sam are beating the pro-war drums like you are.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what are the rest of us supposed to do?
Well, I know. I do a segment that's like, I'm actually pretty, like, I think obviously there's something there with the Russia story, but I think it's more of a, like, a money laundering story than some kind of, like, you know, Manchurian candidate story. But it's funny, like, you can do a video on, like, this is why Exxon and Putin are synchronized in a, like, global hunt for oil. And I think anybody remotely on the left would probably not be so excited about that. And I still get the, like, you want a nuclear armed conflict just because you hate Donald Trump so much and you're an apologist for Obama, even though you criticized him while I was, you know, popping Vicodin and didn't even know what the news was. So yeah, anyway.
You're total. But I mean, that's right. This is not McCarthyism and nobody's beating drums.
Right.
For war. We just, right. And of course, it's not going to be, unlike, I mean, it'd be great if there was a Manchurian candidate scenario. I would love that. It would be so great, right?
What do you need from me, Vladimir?
Of course, it's money, in all likelihood. And, you know, and it should be investigated, and that's it. And some of those guys are right. I mean, that's it. We head to 2018, and it gets to be the early part of next year, and this is still all we're talking about.
Yes,
and
that's
not
a problem.
Legitimate health care and not legitimate rectification of income inequality and tax reform.
Right.
Then we're going to lose again. That I agree with.
So then that's where I have two more questions for you, and that leads perfectly to the first one, which is like the thing that is striking. I'm trying to think of how to articulate this, but it's like we've had this mass institutional meltdown over the last couple of decades from what I see. So all institutions, particularly obviously Wall Street and the business sector, has completely undermined itself with greed and corruption and recklessness. But, you know, the press has failed in many ways, and, you know, mainstream politics has failed. A lot of these institutions have become very broken. But now what's happening is that with Trump, I think for people that are able to think a little bit subtly, they're realizing, well, wait a second, those institutions were very broken, but there was still some things that I took for granted. Like there were things that the EPA did, or there was some basic kind of things that even in enormous, decadent, you know, plutocratic America were still kind of working as an institutional base. And now the next stage of republicanism is to completely take a sledgehammer to all of it. But the problem is, as we were saying before, is that where does the accountability come from? Because it's still emanating from these institutions that people just don't trust. The mainstream press, the Democratic Party, and often for reasons that are those institutions' self-created problem. So I guess like it's a big thing to take on, but I agree with you that there's a lot of, you know, I call it the dumb left. There is that sort of stupid, destructive, its own version of false equivalency when we're talking about Trump and other politicians. But at the same time, I think the smart version might be you can't really get rid of the cancer that's grown with Trump and the Republican Party without the sort of like overall immune system dysfunction of the whole system that we've created over the last couple of decades. I don't know. Does that make sense?
No, it does. It does. And so it's a big, giant job. And I'm not sure how we handle it without real political leadership, because nothing gets done without political leadership in this country. And that means if a Democrat is sort of leading that charge, that it's got to be somebody who, again, like connects effectively. Right. I mean, this guy, you know, part of the frustration that many on the left have with President Obama is that I think he had that political skill.
Yes, definitely.
And he didn't use it. Or I think it's entirely possible that white people like us don't recognize the enormous burden that like he and Michelle faced on a daily basis.
I'm just going to add one addendum. White people like you.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah, white people. Like me. Sorry. that they didn't think, hey, we just got to get through today.
Right.
As this country was not quite ready to accept us, really accept us. Like the idea was fine, but the act.
I think it's totally true culturally, but I don't think that anybody would have objected to President Obama in his style of public communication advocates a serious housing policy that helps people out of the crisis. Like, you know, I think what you're saying is partially true, but I don't think it applies to the policy
stuff. Yeah, I just think it's something we ought to recognize in our criticism of Obama.
Yeah, of course.
But
I agree.
Must go on.
I agree.
So it's got to be somebody sensational, you know, and because you're talking about, you're talking about convincing tens of millions of Americans to think about things differently. You know, the perfect example was, you know, we saw this thing significantly in Ohio with Governor DeWine, supporting, coming out strongly for address the opioid problem. And then his lieutenant governor, who's going to run for governor, talking about her two kids, 26 and 21 or 26 and 23, who are both dealing with serious opioid addictions. And so these are Republicans.
Right.
And then you look at Trump during the campaign, you know, oddly, the opioid issue became a campaign issue in 2016. John Kasich talked about it. Bernie Sanders talked about it. Hillary Clinton talked about it a lot.
Yep.
Then the White House, they cut 95% of the Office of National Drug Control Policy budget, 95% from $388 million to $24 million. And so, you know, Trump was just like, hey man, drain the swamp. And to your point, in that question, this swamp was fine. This swamp
that was
good.
Actually a clean reservoir, which you're polluting.
That's right. Yeah. That was not right. My kids swam there.
Right.
It was fine.
Right.
And You know, so it's not that everything government did was wrong. I mean, you and I always knew this. Government does big jobs, and they do many of these big jobs incredibly well, and they also waste a lot of money.
But I would actually argue overall that government bureaucracy was probably one of the least, like, of all the places, and a lot of places where government did fail, it was compromised by corporate money, and that's why. You know, there was a lot of areas of American life where, you know, hated government bureaucrats were like quietly and effectively going about the business of like making sure that arsenic wasn't in your water and, you know, stuff again that people weren't thinking about when they went into all these conspiracy theories and libertarian fantasies.
Part of it's going to be a re-education about what government does.
Right.
And one of the things is have a giant, big federal program that helps states deal with opioid addiction, which is, you know, which is kills more people than drunk driving, a lot more.
Yep.
And to say nothing, you know, we were on the Young Turks on Friday, and, you know, as hurricane season starts, and Trump hasn't named heads of NOAA or FEMA yet.
Right.
And how outrageous that is. And I my best point of the week was, thank God he hasn't named people.
Right.
Because the acting directors are probably career employees of NOAA and FEMA. And they might be fine, right?
Exactly.
Because they're going to be professionals who work at these departments and will actually be equipped to handle situations when they need to, assuming that he hasn't completely slashed their budgets.
Yeah, that's a great point. That is the point of the week. My last question, Ben, I think you and I should talk movies more often. Are there, you know, I mean, it's a generic question, but are there movies that fit the moment for you? I mean, I know, like, you know, Children of Men. That was a movie that seemed like it, you know, that's a kind of obvious one. But I don't know, in some ways, Chinatown, I think, even down to the father-daughter relationship. What are you thinking about?
Well, I mean, first of all, this week, it aired yesterday, but it airs again Wednesday, 2 and 7 all over the country, in theaters, The Godfather.
Yep.
Fathom Events, Turner Classic Movies, putting that on. But, I mean, you know, The Godfather is about a lot of things. I mean, it's about family, it's about crime, but it's about sort of reckless corporate greed.
Right.
And it's also The Godfather, and you have an opportunity to see it in the theater with other people, and you'll all cheer the same lines, and it'll be a great experience. 2 and 7, check local listings for a theater near you. You know, last year's Hell or High Water, you know, which was my favorite movie of the year.
I
think it was the best movie of the year, but it was my favorite. Yeah,
I love
great.
That movie.
And that was about, you know, regular folks' frustration going too far, but the frustration was legit and understandable and meaningful.
Yeah, that was a great. I think I texted you actually after I saw that, like, on a
you
plane
did,
or something, and I was amazed. I was like, "Where did that come from?" That I agree. I would recommend that. And is that part of the Sicario? Like, is that a follow? It's like a trilogy that's going to be at the border.
No, I don't think so.
I had read that
related
somewhere.
Anyway.
All right. Oh, no, it's the same screenwriter, but I guess maybe.
The books and the Cartel series by Don Winslow, which are going to become movies. Cartel, Ridley Scott's going to do it, but you know, everybody should read Don Winslow and those Cartel books. They're telling. And by the way, just because we're talking and everybody likes it, but I must say, Wonder Woman is. I don't really care about superhero movies. Wonder Woman's pretty great. I liked it, except for the parts where I felt emasculated when the girl did stuff. But other than that, it was pretty good.
Wow. Well, that says a lot, because that's why I was planning on not seeing it, obviously.
No, it's fine. It's good. It's good. It's nice. And it's, I mean, it did make World War I seem a little bloodless, but nonetheless, that was literally in our review. That was my biggest objection. I'm like, you can't, you know, World War I is literally the dumbest thing man has ever done. That's the good news, is that we're at 100 years since the war ended next year, and we still haven't done anything quite as dumb as
I don't know. We're working on that. Yeah.
Give it some time.
Give it some time. I might drone Sadiq Khan. That could be pretty dumb. Ben Mankiewicz, Turner Classic Movies, The Young Turks, my pal. Thank you.
Yes, my pal, Michael. Thanks.
All right, man. Talk to you soon. Thanks a lot. Okay, everybody, we're going to get to the fun half. We got a lot to get to.
I'm so much more competent than Wilhelm II.
I am so competent. you remember that was one of the great moments where he's literally, it was during the campaign, he's like panting in one of his pant moments. He goes, I am so confident. Every day is opposite day. We're going to go to the fun half. You know all the ways you can support the show, so do it. 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. IMs are open. See you in the fun half.